Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the last of the narrow lines on Daf Lamed Hey Omid Aleph. Before we begin the actual Gemara, let us glance at the side in the margin where we have a structural note, which reads, Shomer Shomer, a Bailey, an individual entrusted with an item to watch it, she'eino yodea efo hiniyach hapikonon, a shomer that says, I don't know where I put it. Have a pshiyot v'chay of that constitutes recklessness, irresponsibility, and therefore, even if he happens to be the least of those shomrim that carry upon them obligations, namely the unpaid Bailey, the shomer chinam, if he says, being asked for the return of the entrusted item, and he responds, I don't know where I put it, he will be obligated to compensate the owner for the item entrusted. The Gemara. Hahu gavro the afkid kifi gabe chavre. There was a man that entrusted kifi, type of jewelry, by his friend. Could you watch my kifi for me? Omar lei, the owner, upon asking for it in return, said, Havli kifoi, give me my jewelry. Omar lei, the shomer responded, Lo yodana, hecha osvinu, I don't know where I placed them. Also, the Kamed Rav Nachman. Omar Le, Rav Nachman, upon hearing this case, said, Kol Lo Yodano, any expression like that, namely a shomer, the Bailey says, I don't know where I put it, Pshi Usa Hi Zil Shlim. That's considered Pshia, considered irresponsible, reckless behavior, and therefore you have to pay. Lo shilem, and he did not cooperate with that ruling and did not pay. Ozal Rav Nachman, agve la'apadne mine. Rav Nachman then went and ruled that his apadne, his house, shall be collected from him as payment. So that with that, it's then as if the shomer paid. Lesof ishtakach kifi v'aikor. In the end, the kifi were discovered. They were found. The shomer found them, and in the meantime, they increased in value. They became worth a lot more than they were originally worth. Now, in the meantime, just to review the obvious, the owner of the kifi received his payment through the house that was transferred by Rav Nachman to the owner of the kifi. Omar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman now says, Hadri kifi the marayu, the hadra apadna the mora. I want the kifi, the jewelry, to be returned to the original owner, and the shomer shall get his house back. Now, from the context of the story and from what the Gemara reports, you can get a very clear impression that with the increase in the value of the kifi, they are worth a lot more than the house that the shomer had to part with in payment for the kifi in accordance with their original value. So Rav Nachman now is requiring the shomer, who's currently holding on to these more valuable, the increased value jewelry, to to part with it and get his lesser value house back in return. Omar Rava. Rava speaks up now, and his speech, if you will, last four lines. Omar Rava. Hava Yasivna Kame de Rav Nachman. I was seated in front of Rav Nachman, who Pirkin Hamafkid Have, and we were learning this Perek. Perek Hamafkid. That's the name of the Perek we're learning right now in Bava Metzia, and Rava was learning that too, with Rav Nachman. The Amri lay, and I asked him, Shilem Velo Rotza Lishova. If the shomer pays for the item and opts for that as opposed to swearing an oath that would have exempted him, the shomer thereby gains the rights to whatever profits will result from that item in the future. In the Mishnah's case, he is entitled to receive the double payment when the thief is found. What is Rava trying to say? The shomer, in our case, paid for the kifi by his house being transferred to the owner of the jewelry. Now that the kifi are worth a lot more, should he, the shomer, not be entitled to hold on to them, to keep them, to retain them? Why do you, Rav Nachman, insist on the kifi being returned to the original owner of the jewelry and the shomer getting his currently less value house in return? Velo ahadurli. Rava continues to tell us that I raised this question and he didn't answer me. And you know what? Veshapir ovid velo ahadurli. And he was right in not responding to me. My taimo. What's the reason for not responding? In other words, what's the reason for making a distinction? Whereas in the case of the Mishnah, payment for the item does result in the shomer profiting, and in the story brought to Rav Nachman with the kifi, payment for the jewelry does not result in the shomer ultimately profiting. The difference is hasam lo atrichei the beidina. In the case of the Mishnah, the shomer didn't trouble the Beis Din to get involved, did not trouble the court to get involved. He came forth on his own, willingly paying for the item, and therefore he merits enjoying the benefits, the profits. Hacha, in the Rav Nachman case with the kifi, atrichei the beidina. The shomer troubled the court. As you can see, the shomer didn't want to pay for the kifi. Rav Nachman and his court got involved and had to collect from that shomer his house. And as a result, the shomer is not entitled to benefit from the profit, the increased value of those kifi. The Gemara now raises a question that has broad ramifications. On the side of the Gemara, we entitled this sugya, this discussion, under the nosei, the topic heading, Shuma Hadar. So before we go into the Gemara text, just a word or two about this. Shuma is an assessment. The concept of Shuma arises quite often in the case of lenders and borrowers, where a borrower of money doesn't have cash with which to repay the loan. And in lieu of the cash payment, property of the borrower is collected by the lender. The property of the borrower is subjected to an assessment to evaluate does the property correspond to the value of the loan? How much property? Could be a section of a field, but an assessment, a shuma, is made. When that happens, so eventually the malve, the lender, collects the property of the borrower, and it's his. What happens in the course of time if the borrower comes up with the funds enabling him to pay off the loan that in the meantime has been paid through the lender's collection of the borrower's property. Can the borrower, by paying up the loan now with the cash, get his property in return? That's the concept of shuma, property that was assessed and collected. Hodar. Hodar is the same as the word chozar, or chozer, returns. In the story we just saw, the shomer didn't pay for the jewelry, so instead his house was collected, the house corresponding to the original value of the jewelry. The shomer in that story eventually finds the jewelry, and Rav Nachman says, give the jewelry back to the original owner of jewelry, and you get back your house, the house that was collected in the meantime as payment for the debt. So the Gemara now asks, Lameimra de Sava Rav Nachman de Shuma Hodr, should we then conclude from here that Rav Nachman is of the opinion that properties collected in lieu of cash payment are to be returned as a result of an eventual payment that's made? We described the borrower-lender situation where the cash payment is made. In this case, the payment, the later payment for the house in return would be by the return of those kifi. The Gemara says from here we can't conclude that that's Rav Nachman's opinion. Shiny Hossam, the case involving Rav Nachman and the jewelry is different. The reason the house is returned is the shuma betois have. The whole need for the assessment was under mistaken circumstances. Why was the house collected by the owner of the kifi? Because the impression was that the kifi are no longer extant. Certainly, they're no longer, the thinking is, that they're no longer in the shomer's possession. So the shomer has to pay for it, and he paid it with his house. But it turns out that the jewelry was in the shomer's house all along. And that's what we mean by shuma, the assessment of the house and its collection by the original jewelry owner. Betoyes have it. It was a mistake to call have a kifi mekara. The kifi, the jewelry, were in the shomer's possession from the outset. It's true the shomer says, I don't know where it is. Okay, he misplaced it, but it was in his possession the whole time. And had that been known at the outset, so there would never have been a house collection to begin with. The whole thing, that whole event was under, as we said, mistaken circumstances. But in a case where a borrower defaulted on a loan in terms of cash payment, so the borrower has no means of paying up the loan in terms of cash, so what's the next step? The assessment of the borrower's property and the collection of that by the lender. That's a legitimate equivalent pay-up of the loan. No mistaken circumstances there. So that in a case like that, even if sometime later the borrower comes up with the cash, he can't insist on getting his property in return. Amri Nahardoi. We continue with this concept of shuma. Is it chozer or not? Nahardoi says, shuma hodar, atreser yarchi shosa. In the case of a defaulted loan and lender's collection of property, the borrower can retrieve his property by paying up for it in cash up till 12 months, which is a year. Tresar is 12 yarchi months, shosa, constituting a year. Fiomar amemar, and amemar, who you'll see is from the Nahardo, is from Nahardo. Nahardo is the name of a place. It also represents an opinion. But our Meimar comes and says, Ano mi Nahardo Ano, I'm from Nahardo, Usviro Li, and I'm of the opinion, Shuma Hodr Li Oilom. There's no statute of limitations regarding the return of the borrower's property. Whenever the borrower comes up with the funds, he can insist on the return of the property that had been collected up till then. Vilchasa and the Gemara rules Shuma Hodur Li'olam, that, like a Meimar, that the return of the property to the borrower, to the one who had carried the debt, is open-ended. It can be returned. The return can be enforced Li'olam, open-ended. Mishum Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'alsisa ha-yosher v'hatoiv. Where we are expected, as the receivers of God's Torah, to practice that which is that which is the right thing to do. And it could very well be that there's something called the letter of the law, and in terms of the letter of the law, dry, cold legal logic, the return of the property is not something that needs to be. However, the Torah, in saying V'yalsisa yosher v'tov, is saying that we don't conduct ourselves and limit ourselves to cold, pure legal logic. But at the end of the day, a person would rather have his property, his real estate, than the cash, so that when he parts with his cash, when he eventually pays up for the debt, he's entitled, based on Vosiso Yosher Vatov, to get his property back. Without committing ourselves to anything at this point, this somehow reminds us of the topic that we've discussed earlier in the Masechta of practicing Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. There, however, the Gemara cited the Pasuk in Yisro, Perek Yudches, in Shmos, Voldat Elohim Asaderach Asher Yelchubo, as the source for Lefnim Mishuras Hadin. Here, the Gemara is citing another Pasuk, leaving room to think that maybe they're separate topics. But all that having been said, we'll continue now in the Gemara. Pshita, the following is obvious. This is point number one. Shamu lei lebal choiv, a person that had money owed to him, a creditor, received property because the borrower didn't have cash to pay up, so the borrower's property was assessed for a particular creditor. V'ozal ihu v'shama lebal chov didei. And then this particular creditor, we can call him creditor number one, he owed money to another creditor, creditor number two. And because he, creditor number one, didn't have cash to pay, so the property that he received from the original borrower, he, creditor number one, in turn transferred it or enabled creditor number two to collect that. Amrinon lei, we tell creditor number two, lo odif at migavra de osis mine. You have no greater strength in terms of retaining the property than the one from whom you came. Who did you get the property from? You got it from what we called creditor number one. If creditor number one had received a cash payment from the original borrower, creditor number one would have had to part with the property. As we said, Shuma Hodor. You got that property, trace that property back to its origins, and you will see that you too, if you should receive cash from the original owner, you will have to give him back that property. In other words, you don't have any stronger claim on the property than the one from whom you received the property. Rashi, that's opposite the fourth, fifth wide line of the Gemara. Rashi says, Lo adifas mi bal chov rishon shebosa mikocho. You don't have greater strength, as we said, for retention of the property than the one from whom you came. Kishem shehu machzira. Just like he, first creditor, would have to return the vito ma'isov mishum vasisa yoshev atov. He would have to return the property to the original borrower based on that posuk. Af ato kabel ma'osech v'alim rishonim. So too, you had a debt to collect. Well, take the cash from the original owner of the property, and with that you get the debt owed to you paid up, and give him back his property. Mishum vasisa yosher vahatov. Let us continue in the Gemara. Someone collected property. A lender of money collected property, and then what did he do? A number of different possibilities here. Zovna, he sold it. After collecting it for the debt that was owed him, he then sold it. Orsa from the word Yerusha, he bequeathed it. Or Viyava b'matona, or he gave it as a gift. Now, in these three different examples, you have a second receiver of the property. The original debtor, if he pays them, can he, the original debtor, get his property back from any one of these three? The one who bought it, the one who received it as a Yerusha, or the one who received it as a gift. So the Gemara says, Vadai hani meikoro adaita da'ara nochus, v'lav adaita de'zuzi nochus. In these cases, we'll focus on the first example here, Zavna. Someone bought the property. His purchase of the property was in order to, nochus means to descend upon the property. He entered the property because of it. He was interested in the property. He wasn't interested in getting money for that property. And therefore, in contrast to the previous case where the second receiver of the property was receiving it because of a debt that was owed to him, a cash debt that was owed to him. In that case, the second receiver of the property was interested primarily in getting cash. He got the property there in lieu of cash. Not so in these examples. Number three. Shamu la leisha. A woman, a single woman, had lent money to a borrower. Borrower defaulted, and the woman collected property from the borrower. The insiva, and then she got married. Oi, shamu mino de isha. The insiva, umesa. Case example four is where a woman borrowed money and she didn't have the means of paying back the cash. So property was collected from that woman. She was a single woman. As a single woman, she paid up her debt with property, and then she got married. And so in these cases, three and four, in case three, the woman was a lender. In case four, the woman was a borrower. And there was a property transfer in both cases three and four. And after the property transfer, she got married. And then she died. Baal benichse ishto, a husband with regard to his wife's properties, loikeach have, he is considered like a purchaser. Now, categorizing him as a purchaser, we now analyze the cases 3 and 4 as to what the result is. In case 3, the woman had been a lender of money. She collected property, and after collecting the property, she died. After collecting the property, she got married and then died. So when she collected the property, she then got married. At that point, the husband is viewed as a purchaser of the wife's property. We're going to limit that description to our case at hand. There's a lot more to talk about, but as far as the case at hand, the husband is considered a purchaser. What did we say just a couple lines ago? In example number 2, we said, Zovna, if a person collects property and then sells it, the seller retains possession, does not have to part with it when the original borrower comes up with cash and expects it in return. So that in case 3, the woman had collected the property, got married, then she died, the husband retains ownership of it. That's what lo mahadir means here. He doesn't return it. Now, in case 4, what had happened? The woman paid her debt with property, which is now in the possession of the creditor. She then got married. Can the husband, as a lokeach, but the property has since been transferred to the creditor, can the husband in that case, after the woman dies, can he go and offer money to her creditor to get the property back? So we say no. V'lo mahadrin olei. It's not, in that case, he doesn't get it back. We take a look at the Rashi on the third line under the Gemara text. V'lo mahadrin olei. Hecha deshamu mina, where the property had been assessed and collected from the woman, the borrower. Vin Siva, in the meantime, she then got married. Umesa, and then died. V'yorsha baila. And a husband inherits his wife. The husband now goes to the creditor trying to offer him money to get the property back. Lo motzi lemeimar, he, the husband, cannot claim yorsha ani. He can't say I'm an heir. Why? Dekeleikeach shavya rabbana velo ki yoresh. If he would be viewed as a yoresh, so then we saw in example number 2, after Zovna, we saw Orsa. So an heir has, we'll say, entitlements to get property back. But the husband is not considered an heir, even though technically speaking he inherits his wife, but in terms of legal categories, he is considered a purchaser. And now, with that in mind, we continue in the Gemara. The Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, Be'usha Hiskinu. In Maseches Ksubas, we learn that in Usha, which was the seat of the Sanhedrin at a certain point in history, that's the name of a place. In Usha, it was enacted. Ha'isha Shemochra Benifse Malug, Bechaye Baila, Umesop. A woman who sells property that she had brought into her marriage. Property that she retains the principal value and the husband is entitled to the fruits. A woman like that that sold those properties while her husband was alive. And then she died. Habal motzi miyad alekuchos. The husband has the right to force those purchasers to return to him the properties. Why? Because he is considered a first purchaser. Before they bought the property from the woman, the husband was on the scene already. He is called a lokeach. So with that description of the husband being viewed in legal terms vis-a-vis his wife's properties as a lokeach, we understand why in example number three we said he does not return the properties to the one that borrowed money from his wife. And in example four, his wife who parted with properties because of debts that she owed, he, the husband, cannot demand their return by paying off that original debt, because he's not called a yoresh, he's called a lokeach. We continue with the Gemara at the top of Amud Beis. Before we continue with the text, let us glance at the topic heading, the nosei. Loive sheshilem chovei bekarka, a borrower that paid off his debt with land instead of cash. Me'atzmo b'li latriach bezin, he did so on his own without troubling the court. Ha'im yochol achakach lishalei mois lamalve lekabel karkoi b'chazora. In effect, this is just a repeat of the discussion we've had till now. Can he pay cash to the creditor that collected the property and get his property in return? The Gemara. Agve ihu bechovo, a borrower through his own volition paid karka to his creditor in payment of the debt without troubling the Beis Din. Rashi at the top adds, Agve ihu bechovo li'el mahader, gabi shuma. As we indicated, this is a review or a return back to the discussion earlier. Klomar, im lo shamua Beis Din lamalva al korcho shaloive, if the court did not against or forcibly evaluate, assess the properties for the creditor, now we continue in the Gemara. So we understand the borrower on his own paid off the debt with the land. These two Amoroyim disagree. One says that the property can be returned, or the has to be returned to the borrower if he comes up with cash. And v'chadam alohadra, and the other opinion says no. Even if the debtor comes up with cash, he can't get his property back. The creditor collected the property in lieu of the debt, and he's now the owner. Man diyam alohadra, the opinion that says that the malve, the creditor, doesn't have to part with it. He can keep it. Sovar, he holds, hai zvini ma'al yohi, that this is a case of a full-fledged sale. It's viewed as a full-fledged sale. Daha midaita denafshe agve, the love, the debtor on his own, offered the property. The court didn't get involved. This debtor didn't have cash, and he realized he didn't have any cash to pay up the debt. So what did he do? He gave the property to the creditor. That's like a sale, and therefore, once you buy property, it's yours. Original owner can't force you to take money to have the property returned. Uman diomar hadra savar, the opinion that says that the property is returned, that when the original debtor, the lova, comes up with money, he can force the creditor to return the property that was voluntarily given to him. Lo zvini ma'al yahu, the creditor's collection wasn't a result of a sale and purchase. V'hai da'agve midaite, that which the lova was considerate enough to, on his own, without the court forcing him, to pay up the debt with the property. Below also Ladina, and he didn't, the borrower didn't go to court. Machmas kisufahu the agve. The payment of the property was simply out of embarrassment. He wanted to avoid the trauma of a court appearance. But to categorize that as a sale, that's far-fetched. Therefore, this opinion says it's not a sale, and when the debtor comes up with the required funds, he can insist on his property being returned. Now, someone who was not paid his debt with cash, and property was assessed in anticipation of the creditor's collection of the property. From what point in legal procedure, from what point in time is the creditor entitled to consume the produce produced by that field, the field that was assessed in anticipation of paying off the loan? Here we have three opinions. Rabba Omar, Mechi, Motya, Adrachta, Liyodei. We look at Rashi on the fourth line from the top. Adrachta, the Achar Tishim Yom, Shinifsa Kadin, 90 days after the court ruled that the creditor is entitled to his debt. Shenifsak, that's 90 days after the court issued its ruling. Damrinon, we say in Bava Kama, the based in Kaisvin Adrachta, the court writes a document. Shtar Psak Din, this is a court ruling. Anifse Loivishib Chomokim Shimse Mishalo, Yikhem Umoisim Lo Hashtar. This document indicates that the malveh, the lender, has a right to seek out properties owned by the loveh, the debtor, wherever they may be, and collect them. So that this adrachta is a document giving license to the creditor to seek out properties of the lova that correspond to the debt. So from that point, he's entitled to the produce. The next opinion, Abaye Omar, Eidov Bechasumov Zochin Lo. Rashi says, from the point in time that adrachta was signed, even before it gets to his hands. Rabba mentioned the word liyodei, when at the point that the malve gets the document in his hands. Abaye is giving us a time which is even earlier, even before the document reaches his hands, it was signed. Rava Omar, Rava now gives us the latest of these times and says, Mechishlimu Yemei Achrizosa. Literally, it means from the point in time that the announcement days, this is a reference to a time period when the property found, properties of the lova of the borrower were found by the malveh. The malveh doesn't take immediate possession of the properties, but rather the properties are subjected to a public auction. And that public auction, public announcement for the public to bid on the properties is the time frame called Yemei Achrizasa. That has there's a limitation to that, to the amount of time that takes place. The goal, of course, of subjecting the property to public auction is to fetch the highest price for the property through which the price fetched for the property is more than the value of the loan, so the debtor, the loave, will benefit. He'll be able to have the loan paid off with the cash received for the sale of the property, and the balance he can retain. So now we take a look at Rashi, who elaborates on this. This is Rava's opinion, that namely, only at that point does the creditor have the right to eat the fruits. Even though the creditor received the adrachta document, and he only found found property after a while. And when he finds property owned by the debtor, he has to come to the court, and they announce that there is property here for sale. That is what is taught. And if this one, the creditor, is willing to accept it at a value more than anyone else offered for it, so then he will be entitled to receive the property. And Maseches Erechin Meforesh Kama Yomim Machrizin Perek Shemavs Yisaimim, and then Perek called, the name of the Perek there is Shemavs Yisaimim. It is taught in Maseches Erechin V'yad Shomu Hanach Yoimei Havapira Delova. The time frame for the Hachroza that is mentioned in Maseches Erechin. When that time frame finishes, only then does the malve, the creditor, have a right to the peros that were owned, that belonged originally to the love. So in terms of the three opinions we have here, the earliest of the times is the middle opinion. The earliest of the times entitling the malve to the peros is Abaye, followed by Rabba, and the latest time to which in which the Malva would be entitled to the Peros is that which Rava taught. And now we have a new Mishnah. On the side we have a topic heading which reads, Soicher Para, someone rented a cow, Hamashilo L'Shoyel, and the renter then loaned it to a borrower, Umeso HaPorah Birshus HaShoyel, and the cow died while in the possession of the borrower. What happens? By way of general information, you probably know that a socher, one who rents a cow, in the event that it dies, the socher is exempt. He's not obligated to compensate for that, because the death is something that we call oinah, something beyond his control. A shoel, a borrower, on the other hand, is responsible, must compensate for loss of items that he is borrowing, even if their death or loss is a result of oinah, something beyond his control. The Mishnah, Hasoche Parah Mechavero, someone borrowed a cow from an original owner, v'hishilo li'acher, and the renter loaned it to someone else, to a borrower, umeisa kedarka, and it died, the cow died, yishova asoicher shemeisa kedarka, the renter swears to the original owner, you know, the cow that I rented, it died in a normal way. That exempts the socher from any financial obligation toward the original owner. V'hashayel yishalim masocher, and the borrower pays the renter. He pays for the cow. Amar Rabbi Yossi disagrees with that and says, Ketzad halo osa schur b'parosa shechavero. How is it possible for the renter to do business, so to speak, to profit from through a cow that didn't belong to him. It belonged to the original owner. Rather, the shoyel will have to compensate to the original owner. Not to the, you know, the compensation that the shoyel is obligated to make is not to the renter, but to the original owner. Omar le Rav Idi bar Ovin Labaye Michti. Rav Idi says, let's look into this. Seicher b'may koni lahai pora. In terms of the Tanakama, who spoke of the socher being like the owner of the cow, he gets payment from the shoyel. The socher, how did he acquire the cow? How did the cow become his? B'shvua. It seems to be through the oath that he took to the original owner, that he, the oath that he swore to the original owner that the animal died in a normal fashion. And through that, the original, through that, the socher acquires the cow, to the extent that the shoyel will end up paying him, the socher, the renter, for the cow's death. Well, if that's the case, v'nei mole maskir l'socher, could it not be such that the maskir should be able to say, v'nei mole, let the maskir say to the socher, to the renter, dal ant v'dal shvuasech, remove your shvua, take yourself out of the picture, so to speak, v'ano mishtaino dino b'hadi shoyel, and I will litigate opposite the shoel. Mishta'ina literally is to speak in court with the shoel. Omar le. So Abaye responds, Mi savris socher b'shvua hu deka koni la. Do you really hold that the socher acquires the cow through the oath that he took? Mishas misa hu dekoni. It's at the point of the animal's death that he is said to acquire it. Ushvua kedei lahafis daito shabalabayas. The oath that he takes is simply to quiet the possible anger on the part of the original owner. Where the original owner could harbor thoughts of recklessness on the part of the renter. So the renter swears, I wasn't reckless, it died through normal means. But the means of acquisition, so to speak, as far as the Tanakama is concerned, is not the shivua that he took, which would have led to the original owner having the upper hand and pushing the socher out of the picture, but rather it's at the point that the animal died that the socher is considered gaining ownership over it. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a new marking, the triangle, and you'll see how its direction alternates. On the side under the Mivneh heading, we have triangles in two different directions. We call that Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the discussion. Under the Nosei, the topic heading, we have the following. Baal HaPorah, the owner of a cow. This owner rented the cow to someone, and then during the rental period, Sheshoa poroso mehasocher. The owner of the cow borrowed the cow from the one that rented from him. Mesa hapora. The cow dies. The cow dies while the borrower, who happens to be the original owner, while he is borrowing it. During the borrowing period, the cow dies. The result will be, following the spirit of the Tanakhama, the first opinion in the Mishnah, what will the din be? The owner will end up paying the renter. Now, that might sound confusing, but when we go into this Gemara, you have to recognize that the Baal, the original owner of the cow, at the time that the story of the Gemara unfolds, he in effect is a borrower. What difference does it make whether the original owner is a borrower or an outsider is a borrower? A borrower has to pay the renter in the event that the cow died, like we saw in the Mishnah. So we've created a, we're going to see in the Gemara, Rabbi Zera opens up this discussion, and based on the din of the Tanakhama, we're presenting a situation that might appear or might sound absurd, but when you look at it in strictly legal terms, the original owner of the cow is going to pay the renter for the cow that died. As we saw in the Mishnah, the renter, upon the death of the cow, the renter becomes the owner of the animal. We now turn to the first triangle, Omar Rabbi Zeira, Pe'omim, at times. Shehabailim Mishalmim Kama Porois Lasocher, that the original owner of the cow will end up paying a number of cows to a renter, to the one who rented from him. Hechi Domi. What are we speaking of? What would the case be? Before we go into the Gemara, we have a little diagram on the side that might help some and might not help. I hope it doesn't confuse anybody. But let us look at the little diagram that you see that we've included in the margin of the Gemara. Starting from the bottom of the diagram, 100. 100 represents 100 days. Someone rented a cow from an original owner for 100 days. During that time, the original owner, and as we go through this sukkah, just remember that the original owner could just as well be an outsider. The original owner says to the renter, "Can you loan the cow to me for 90 days? At the end of those 90 days, you'll get back the cow that you rented. Those will be a completion of the balance of the rental time will be those last 10 days that for which you really did rent it." And of course the renter agrees, and then during that 90 day period the renter turns to the borrower, who happens to be the original owner, and says, "You know, you're borrowing it for 9 days. Would you kindly rent it to me?" And Rashi adds, at this point, he pays him more money. He pays him an additional amount to rent it for 80 days. And he agrees. So the renter now has it for 80 of those 90 days as a rental. During that 80-day rental period, the original owner says, "You know, could you lend me the cow for 70 days? At the end of the 70 days, there'll be an additional 10 days that you get it back to fill up the balance of time that you actually had rented it." And then, during that 70-day borrowing period, the cow dies. What happens? Now, we continue in the Gemara. The question the Gemara asks, Heichi Dami, the din of Rabbi Zera, where you can have an original owner paying a renter a couple of cows, How does that come to be? So the Gemara says, Agra mine mea yomi. A renter came and rented it from an original owner for 100 days. Fahadar shayla mine tishin yomi. And then during that, looking at that 100-day period, the original owner says, would you loan me the cow for 90 days? Hodar agre mine tannin yomi. Now, at that point, the renter does a second rental agreement and says, rent it to me for 80 of the 90 days that you borrowed it. Fahadar shayla mine shivin yomi. And then the original owner said, can you loan me the cow for 70 days? Umesa besuch yimei shelasa. And the animal died during the borrowing period. How many borrowing periods are there? Well, there were two borrowing periods in this story. What did we see in the Mishnah when a cow dies in the domain of the borrower? We saw that the borrower has to pay the renter. De akol she'ela u she'ela mechayev chadapara. For each borrowing time period, one cow is owed. And since there were two borrowing time periods, two cows must be paid. And when we speak about two cows being paid, that means that the renter is going to keep those two cows. Rashi presents this Gemara with a very thorough, elaborate, complete explanation. We're not going to learn together through all of the Rashi, but he adds a major point that you don't see in the words of the Gemara. The Gemara itself said that for each She'elah period, one cow is owed. So we said there were two She'elah periods. There was the 70-day Shoel period and the 90-day Shoel period. However, Rashi says that the borrower is going to have to provide four cows. Two of them, like we said, they will become the property, they will become owned by the renter. However, two more cows are to be transferred by the shoel to the socher to complete the two rental time periods that we explained before when we were looking at the diagram, the balance periods. At the end of the 90-day shoel period, there were 10 days a balance to complete the 100-day rental period. So the show has to provide a cow for the renter to use as a renter does. So that as far as the balance periods, there were two of them. The 70-day shoel period, borrowing period, had a balance of 10 days to complete the 80-day rental period. Those two additional cows will, yes, they'll be returned to the shoel, but because of the death of the original cow happening during the shela period, there's also, as we said earlier, according to Rabbi Zera, two cows that will be paid in, that will be given permanently to the socher. The Gemara continues. Omar le Rav Acha midifti l'Ravina. Rav Acha speaks to Ravina, raising an objection to what Rabbi Zera just taught. Michdi, let's look into what happened here. Chada poro hi. There was one cow, Ayla v'afka. It went in and went out. What do we mean by that? Dafka Mischirus. It went out from the Schirus period of 100 days, Va'ayla L'She'ela, and entered a 90-day borrowing period, Afka Mishe'ela. It left the 90-day borrowing period, Va'ayla L'Schirus, and entered the 80-day renting period. Where do you come off with four cows? We take a look at the Rashi that you can see toward the end of the page, 5-6 lines from the end. Michti chaga paravoi. It was only one cow. There was only one original cow, and that one original cow died during the 70-day borrowing period. Uliinyan tashlum enami, regarding payment as well. L'shalim le'para achas, let the borrower pay one cow. And let it be in lieu of the original cow that had been, we'll say, exposed to two borrowing periods. And let that cow be owned permanently by the renter. V'achas, and a second cow, Yimsar loy lasos ba esrim yom, the shoel, who, as we said, is the original owner, will give the socher one more cow for 20 days. Those 20 days, I'm sure you can see, are represented by the two 10-day balance periods that we featured before. So that instead of four cows, Rav Acha Midifti speaks about two cows, one being permanently given to the socher, and the other for the balance of 20, for the 20-day rental balance period, and after which he'll get it, the shoyl will get it back. Omarle, Ravina reacts to Rav Acha and says, Umi Esau, Lepora be'eno denemo lehochi. Now, first we translate, and then we'll look at Rashi. Is the original cow around? Is it still be'en that you should be able to say this? Now we look at the Rashi where we left off. Mi isa lepora be'eno denemo hochi ilu hoisa kayemes. If the original cow was still alive, hoyapotu legamri, he would have been. The shoel would have been totally exempt. The renter would continue using it for 20 days. Achshav shemesa, now that that original cow is dead, bo olav b'teres tashlumin sheil l'socher al shtei tvios. The renter is claiming from the shoel as we saw in the Mishnah, with a financial claim that a socher has against the shoel that borrowed from him, two separate claims, and therefore says Ravina that the socher is entitled to receive two cows as permanent payment, permanent possession. Mur Rav Ashi Omar, and you notice we have a long point. He disagrees with Ravina, goes back to the direction of Rav Acha. Mur Rav Ashi Omar, Ein lo yaleim elo shtei poros. The socher has a claim of only two cows. Chada de Sheila v'chada de Schirus. One for permanent possession as a result of it dying during the Sheila period, and one to complete the balance of the rental. Shum Sheila Achasi. It's true that there were two borrowing periods, but they all are under the one category of borrowing. Shum means like shame, what name, title. There's one title of borrowing, v'shum schirus achazi. And there's only one heading of rental. True, there are two time periods, but it's all under the one heading. The she'ela, the cow that's going to be paid because of the death during the she'ela period, koni legamri, that the renter gets for permanent possession. The schirus, the cow that's being given by the she'el to the socher to pay off the to complete the balance of the rental period, avad be ba yemei schirusay, the renter will use it for the balance of those rental days. In our example, 20 days. Umadele lemoron, then will be returned to the owner. The owner is, of course, the original owner who happened to be the borrower in our story. We continue now with a new discussion. It involves the socher and shoel that we've been discussing till now. A cow was rented, and the renter, during the rental period, enabled a borrower to borrow it. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nusay, a topic heading, which reads, Chiyuve korban chatos, or osham, obligations, we'll call it maybe penalties, for bringing, that one has to bring as a result of what we'll see in the Gemara, either a sin offering or an guilt offering. Mishum shvuas sheker, the result of lies, false oaths, shalasocher v'ashoel, the lies, these false oaths taken by either the renter or the borrower. Before we get into the Gemara, it's important to know, by way of say introduction, that a korban osham, a guilt offering in this context, is brought only if the false oath is a claim, you swear, making a claim that would have saved you money. That's called kfiras momon. I hope we're able to use the term kfiras momon as we go on in the Gemara once this point has been made clear. There's another situation of a false oath. We call it a shvuas bitui. So you swore falsely, but the nature of the oath or the contents of the oath would not have saved you any money. In other words, you swear falsely that such and such happened, when in reality something else happened, but in both cases you would have had to pay anyway. Can you imagine someone who, let us say, borrowed an animal? And he swears that the animal was stolen. By saying that the animal was stolen, a borrower has to pay for that. In reality, the animal died in its stall. A borrower has to pay for that too. So he lied when he said it was stolen. Was he trying to save himself money through that claim? No. Because by saying it was stolen, he's in effect obligating himself as a borrower to compensate. In reality, it happened to die, that also would have resulted in the borrower's having to pay for it. So he swore falsely, but wasn't attempting to save himself any money through that. In a case like that, a different kind of sacrifice is brought. It's called a korban chatos, a sin offering. We're not going to get into the details or a whole order of the Shas called Seder Kochim, which deals with these topics and details, differences between the nature of the sacrifices. For our purposes, though, it's simple. It's enough to note that there are two distinct sacrifices. By the way, you can have a situation of a shvua, a false oath, resulting in a chatas, where both there's a lie and there's a reality, and in both cases there would have been innocence. Imagine a shomer chinom. We're not going to feature a shomer chinom in our discussion, but as far as an example is concerned, an unpaid baili swears that the animal given to him was stolen. In reality, the animal dropped dead. If the animal was stolen in reality, he would be exempt from paying. That wasn't what actually happened. The animal simply dropped dead. That also is a scenario that for which a shomer chinam is exempt. So he swore falsely, but in swearing falsely, or he lied, claiming it was stolen. He wasn't trying to save himself money. With that claim, he would have been exempt anyway. In reality, the animal dropped dead. Okay, so he lied, but it's a lie. It's an oath that in which there was no kfiras moment. There was no denial of payment. There was no attempt to save himself from payment. These points are well known, I should say. Based on psukim, and there's early literature that deals with this. I make that point because Rav Yirmiya is about to give us four examples. First, he'll give us titles or headlines, and then explain them. But at the end of this whole long point, the Gemara is going to ask the maybe surprising sounding question: what are you telling us? What news is there in your very long statement? And Rashi at that point will point out everything that you're teaching us. We could have figured out from Mishnayos that teach the laws of Shavuos. And therefore, what do we need? Everything that you're telling us. Now, the Gemara. Take note, structurally, that Rav Yirmiya opens with a long point. It's a very long point, a third of the way down, Daf Lamed Vav. First, we read the headlines, and then the Gemara will go over them with explanation. So, Omer of Yirmiya. Pe'omim, there are times, Shishneim Bechatos. Both the Socher and the Shoel will bring a sin offering. A sin offering, as we said, is characteristic of a shvuas bitui, where there's a mere lie without kfiras mamon. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Vav. Pomem shishneim ba'asham. There are times that both the socher and the shoel will, as a result of a false oath, have to bring a guilt offering. Number three. The socher will bring a sin offering, and the shoel will bring a guilt offering. And at times, the socher will bring a guilt offering, and the shoel will bring a sin offering. How does that figure? Truth is, at this point, with the information that we've already given, one might be able to construct, to figure out each one of these cases. And as we said earlier, the information we gave you is information that you would know by studying Psukim and Mir Mishnayos. I say Mir Mishnayos meaning even without Rav Yirmiya. Nevertheless, Rav Yirmiya goes on to present each one of these cases. Number one, as we said, we're going over the cases. Actually, said before that, we continue on the third line from the top of the Gemara, Ha Ketzad. So here the Gemara gives us the introduction that we ourselves mentioned earlier, Kfiras Mamon, and a false oath that involves denial of money, Asham, That results in a guilt offering. Bitui Sfasayim, a mere lie. Bitui Sfasayim would literally mean utterance of one's lips. But a mere lie without the saving of money element, that's a chatas. The psukim are found, the psukim that deal with these topics are found in Vayikra, Perek Hey. So for those that are interested in seeing information at the, we'll say, the original source, by all means, look at the psukim in Vayikra, Perek Hey. We now continue with the Gemara, the double underline marking that you see, we feature on the side of the Gemara, represents dugmois, examples, the fiyuve karbonas, besoicha b'sheol, ayadei shvuos sheker, through false oaths, the following sacrificial obligations would arise. Number one, pa'omim shishneim b'chatos. At times, you'll end up having both of them, the shoyel, the borrower, and the socher, the renter, bringing a sin offering. Kagon, shemeso kedarka. The reality is that the animal died a normal death. Each time, you have to consider in your mind, what are the obligations of these respective shoimrim, given these circumstances? So, you will, the reality is the animal died on its own. The Umru, and they claimed Nansa. I want to point out, just by way of markings, you see this dashed underline highlights what we have indicated on the side. Ma Shikora Befoyal, what really happened. The house marking introduces the word the Umru. Ma Ta'anu, what are they claiming? And we will see as we go through the Gemara, if omim stam sheker b'lekfiras mamon u'bekach chayav chatas, sometimes it's a simple lie without any attempt to save money, the result will be a sin offering. If omim kfiras mamon shemechayav osham, and at times you'll see oaths that entail an attempt to save money, and they'll end up having to bring a guilt offering. So, in example number one, in the reality, what happened is the animal died kedarka, regular death. The Amru, and they claim Nansa, that its, say, its disappearance is a result of ones, circumstances beyond their control. Socher, with regard to a renter, the Benkach u Benkach Miftar Potter. The socher, whether, like the reality, it died a regular death, or it disappeared through other circumstances beyond their control, Rashi adds, because Mesa Kedarka, by the way, is itself an example of ones. So Rashi says, so what's Nansa then? So Rashi offers an alternative, or an additional case of ones, like armed bandits made off with it. That's an example of ones as well. So they claimed that it was Nansa, and they swore to that effect. As far as the socher is concerned, either way, he would be exempt from paying. So he was. So there is, if either way he's exempt from paying, there's a mere lie over here in terms of the misrepresentation of the facts without any attempt to save money. So he's b'chatos, he brings a sin offering. Shoyel, the borrower, the benkach u'benkach yuvim echayev, either way, he would have to pay, whether it be Mesa Kedaka, or as he swears it was Oynes, he'd have to pay anyway. So he wasn't trying to save any money through his false claim. For Chatas, he too brings a Chatas. So we have the Socher and the Shoyel both bringing a Chatas. Pa'omen Shishnei Bosham. We can give you a scenario where both the Shoyel and the Socher would bring a guilt offering. Kagoin, the reality, She Nigneva, stolen. Both a renter and a borrower have to pay for a case of Geneva. That's the reality. Now they lied. V'yomru meisa machmas malacha. It died in the course of their of the use of the animal. That claim, dying during course of normal use of animal, is a claim of exemption. Even a borrower is exempt. The travayu kokafri mamona. Both of them are attempting to save money, to deny owing money through their claim. Doha mechayvi v'kopatri nafshayu. They are guilty because of the reality of theft, and they're attempting to exempt themselves. Patri nafshayu. They're trying to exempt themselves through their claim of meisa machmas melacha. Oh, you're trying to save money. You're trying to exempt yourself when you're really obligated. So both bring a guilt offering. Sochir b'chatas v'sheil b'asham. Kagoin shemeisa kedarka. In reality, a normal death took place while the animal was in its stall. V'yomru, and they swore falsely, saying, Mesa machmas melacha. The animal died while being used in its normal way of use. So cher de benkach u benkach miftar poter chayav b'chatas. The socher, either way, he would have been exempt. He's exempt in mesa kedarka. That's a standard case of onus. And he's exempt if it died during the course of work. So either way, he would be exempt from paying. Ah, he swore falsely, he lied. He lied without attempting to save money. So he's obligated to bring a sin offering. Shoyel, t'mechayev b'meisa kedarka. The shoyel, on the other hand, is obligated to pay in meisa kedarka, which is what really took place. V'kol poter nafshei b'meisa machmas melacha. And he's attempting to exempt himself through the claim of it dying through normal use, the asham. Since he's trying to save money through a false claim, he brings a guilt offering. Number four, soichir b'asham b'shel b'chatos. Kegon, what are the circumstances that would lead to that? Shenigneva. In reality, the animal was stolen. Gneva. That's theft. The Omru, and they swore Mesa Kedarka, died in a normal way while it was in its stall, not during use. Socher, who de Mechayev Begineva Veda, the Socher has to compensate in the case of theft or loss. He's obligated, like a Shomer Socher, according to the Tana Reb Yehuda. And he's trying to exempt himself through a false claim, and he swears to this effect by claiming it died in a normal way while in its stall. B'asham. In reality, as we said, he's chayav for Gneva. He tries to exempt himself through a false claim and oath that it died in a normal way, an onus. So you're trying to save yourself from payment for that through a false oath. B'asham, bring a guilt offering. Shoyel de benkach u benkach yuve mechayev, the borrower. Either way, whether like in reality it was stolen or according to his oath, it died a normal way. But even according to that, he would be obligated to pay. So he wasn't trying to save himself any money. Bechatos, he brings a sin offering for having merely lied under oath. So at this point, Rav Yirmiyah presented four scenarios. My komash malon, what are you revealing to us? And as we saw before in Rashi, we alluded to Rashi that all of this information is found in Mishnayos, the Mishnayos that deal with Shavuos. Tell us under what circumstances a Korban Chatas is brought, under what circumstances a Korban Oshem is brought, and all of the facts that follow from that could have been figured from simply having learned the Mishnayos. What does Rav Yirmiyah as an Amora reveal to us? The Gemara answers, note we have a long answer marking. What does Rav Yirmiya accomplish? Lafuke midrabi ami. He is teaching us laws that will essentially be to the exclusion of Rabbi Ami's approach. Diyoma, what does Rabbi Ami hold? Kol shvua shadayonim mashbien oisa. Any oath that's imposed upon an individual by the court, ein chayoven olam mishum shvuas bitui. The Torah obligation of bringing a sin offering as a result of a lie, a false oath, doesn't apply, says Rav Ami, when that false oath was generated or was enforced or imposed by the court. If a person on his own swears a lie, he brings a korban chatos. If the court imposed the oath and the result was the defendant swearing falsely, Rav Ami says no korban chatos is brought. And where does Rav Ami learn that from? Shenemar oy nefesh ki si shava levate bisvosayim, which is of course in Vayikra Perikei, the section of the Torah that deals with the korban chatos that is brought because of a false oath. Ki si shava, Rabbi Ami understands, me'atzmo, when the individual on his own initiated the oath, not when the court imposes the oath upon him. Komash malon delok Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Yirmiya is teaching us not like Rabbi Ami, because in the cases that Rabbi Yirmiya was featuring, where we saw a korban chatos obligation as a result of a false oath, in fact, imposed, I should say, the need for an oath was imposed by the court, and the defendant swore falsely. So according to Rabbi Yirmiya, even under those circumstances where there is a false oath taken, an oath that was imposed by the court, an oath, however, where there was no attempt to save money, there is a chatos, a sin offering obligation, contrary to the way Rav Ami approaches the matter. So that's what Rav Yirmiya was trying to accomplish. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.